This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature.
Hello. Welcome to episode 12 of our class podcast, Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. I'm Lexi, a classical languages and linguistics major. If you have not already had the pleasure of listening to the episodes prior to mine, I highly recommend doing so, both for your own enjoyment and because in this episode, I intend to elaborate on themes and ideas already analyzed by my peers in previous lines. My assigned verses were lines 700 to 737, which contains the latter half of Haman's speech to Creon, as well as further dialogue between Creon, the chorus, and Haman in response. Contained in these lines are thematic metaphors, meaningful lexical choices, devolutionary dialogue, and an analysis of the pitfalls of extremity and inflexibility. I hope to unpack all of these things. To give a bit of context, in the lines immediately leading up to mine, we have our first experience with Creon's son, Haemon, who enters in the hopes of dissuading his father from putting Antigone, his betrothed, to death for attempting to provide funeral rites for her brother, Polynices. Creon provides us with yet another rambling and slightly illogical speech, emphasizing A, the importance of respectful offspring, B, the necessity of not sacrificing respect for the father or family in exchange for the embrace of a woman, because she will eventually become cold, or an ulcer, as Creon puts it. Thirdly, I proclaimed that I would kill whoever violated my edict. Antigone violated my edict. I will not be perceived as a coward and a liar to the city, so I have to kill her. And lastly, perhaps Creon's most unstable and outrageously tyrannical point, that the most important thing is yielding to authority unconditionally, even if it is wrong. To which things, Haemon begins his response by saying something along the lines of, "Yes, Dad, you are so right, and I am totally your guy. You are doing great. Okay, well, except there's sort of this issue that all of the townspeople are really scared of you, and they feel really bad for Antigone. They think that her burying Polynices and not allowing him to rot and be eaten by dogs was actually really honorable, and they mourn for her. Everybody is kind of saying this behind your back." Having delivered this bad news to Creon, we now begin my assigned lines, where Haemon starts trying to reason with Creon and convince him that if he doesn't stop being so extreme, he might run into trouble. In my opinion, the overarching meaning of Haemon's speech in context to the rest of the play is rather clear and simple to interpret. So I think that the best way to capture the intricacies of this passage is really just to walk through it, analyzing significant details as they come up. In considering this interaction between Haemon and Creon, it is vitally important to keep in mind that this is a conversation between a father and a son, not a ruler and his subject, which, up to now, is the only type of interaction we have seen with Creon. The chorus cannot really tell Creon that he is wrong. The guard certainly was not able to tell Creon that he is wrong. And Antigone and Ismene, although they are also family, are not really in any position to be defying Creon, as they are currently being questioned for treason. Haemon is unique in this way, in that he is the first to really attempt to give his father some genuine advice. In these first few verses, Haemon, knowing that he is about to say some things that his father really isn't going to want to hear, first attempts to emphasize to Creon how much he values his well-being and what a valuable gift a patras thalantos, a flourishing father, is to him. However, he then goes on to advise his father not to hold one and only one opinion in himself, commenting that whoever is arrogant enough to think that only he thinks, speaks, and has a soul unique to others, that these sorts of men, o theson kainoi, are seen as empty. Haemon then embarks on a core theme of this speech with alandra ketis he sophos ta monthanein polis granhuden kai ta me tainein agon. But it is not a shameful thing that a man, even if he is already wise, learn many things and that he not stretch himself too much. There are two interesting aspects to be noted in these lines. First, Haemon's use of monthano, meaning to learn, here is relevant for a couple of reasons. In contrast to other Greek words that can mean to know, such as epistemai, which means to know thoroughly or to know well, monthano means to learn by inquiry, to learn from observation, to notice. It is related to the Greek word methetes, meaning student. It denotes a humble form of knowing. It is knowing by learning, and at this point in the play, this is certainly something Creon could use a bit more of. This word occurs a second time in the remainder of Hymen's speech, and again in the chorus's immediate response to him, which is a noteworthy amount of appearances in such a short span of lines. Secondly, Hymen's advice that Creon not tainain agon, not stretch himself exceedingly tight, draws an interesting parallel to another character in the play, Antigone's sister Ismene. In the prologue of the play, Ismene advises Antigone against violating Creon's edict, with the logic that perissa prasein uk exe nun udena, meaning to act in excess holds no sense whatsoever. Hymen and Ismene seem to parallel one another in that they both bring some much-needed moderation to the table as they try to advise their two very difficult family members on the dangers of acting in excess or with too much extremity. Hymen's speech continues with some particularly relevant advice through metaphor, saying, "You see at wintry rivers how many things of trees yield, with the result that their branches are saved, but that the things that resist perish root and branch." It is clear what Hymen is attempting to tell Creon here. Hymen metaphorically hints at the fact that if Creon doesn't bend his will and continues resisting everyone's counsel so much, that he is going to perish. And he is not just going to perish, he is going to perish auta premna. He is going to perish literally root and branch. The use of auta premna is a particularly striking word choice on behalf of Sophocles, as it seems to foreshadow Creon's impending doom at the end of the play very literally. Creon's stubbornness does not just lead to his own downfall in the end, but it also leads to both his son and his wife's suicides. Creon does not just perish, but his entire family perishes. He perishes root and branch. And the metaphors don't stop there. Hymen now provides us with yet another boat metaphor. This is the third one we have seen up to now, the first coming from Creon's ship of state metaphor in his opening lines, and the second coming from the chorus in their ode to man, and the third coming from Hymen here. He says, "Autos de naus hostis en crate pada tenas hupeke maiden, huptiois kato strepsos, ta loipon zelmasin nautiletai." And in this way, whoever, having stretched the rigging which controls his ship, yields nothing, having turned upside down, that for the remainder he sails with turned over sailing seats. Again, Hymen emphasizes here that if Creon does not begin to give a little slack to this ship of state of his, that his ship is going to turn upside down on him. Moreover, in accordance with the message that Hymen has been presenting thus far, he concludes his speech by encouraging his father to let go of his anger and give a metastasis, a literal change of stance, because, in his opinion, as a young person, he thinks that it is by far the most ideal that a man be totally born full of knowledge. But since this doesn't ever actually happen, it is a noble thing to manthanein, again, to learn from those who speak well. Hymen presents his arguments in this speech very calmly and respectfully, and he certainly raises some valid points. But as our commentator Griffith points out, for Hymen to even speak against his father at all, especially on behalf of a woman, is rather uncommon and notable for ancient Greece. It emphasizes the severity of the situation and how inordinately Hymen perceives his father to be acting. In answer to Hymen's speech, the chorus responds in its typical non-confrontational and appeasing fashion by simply advising Creon that, since Hymen has spoken well twice in a row, it seems wise that the two men at least attempt to mothain, the third use of manthano that we see in these lines, that they at least attempt to learn from one another. Naturally, Creon's response to being told to take the advice of any other person is met with defensiveness and hostility, and sets off what turns into a rather fast-paced and snappy conversation, or stichomythia, between Hymen and Creon. Creon flippantly asks whether he, at his age, is expected to take advice about nature from a guy his son's age. Hymen responds that he would not learn anything unjust from him, and that his father should judge him more on his hetarga, his actions, rather than his chronon, his age. To which Creon sarcastically asks Hymen if he thinks it is a good deed to sebane, to worship rebels, clearly referring to Antigone. Hymen, of course, says that he would obviously not advise his father to worship tous kakus, to worship bad men. Creon asks Hymen then if Hedegar Toyade, she, this very one, if she, Antigone, is she not afflicted with this naso, with this disease? To which Hymen replies, no, not according to the people of Thebes, she isn't. This dialogue between Creon and Haemon sets off a clear devolution in Creon's speech, as evidenced by his growing irrationality and extremely tyrannical thoughts in the final four lines of my assignment. Creon continues the dialogue with, Polis gar haemon ame kre tasein ere? Will the city say to me what it is necessary that I do? To which Haemon responds, Horais tade hos herekos hos agon neos. Do you see how you have said this like an exceedingly young man? Creon responds, Ologar he moi cre me teste arcane kthanos? Is it necessary for me that I rule this land for another person? To which Haemon reasonably replies, Pulisgar uk es thetis andras es thanos. There is no city such that it belongs to one man only. Creon's final two rebuttals here are obviously outrageous. Surely he does not really believe that he should be unaffected by the city's wishes and responsible to no other man than himself. These statements are ludicrous enough that Haemon asks his father if he realizes what a child he sounds like saying them. These final few lines, emphasizing the obvious devolution in Creon's arguments, perfectly set up the second half of the Psychomythia that follows. This will be covered in the following episode, so stay tuned. Before concluding this episode, I would like to briefly comment on my experience as teacher of the day. First of all, the time and effort necessary to complete this assignment successfully compelled me to interact with the text much more intimately and really analyze its intricacies. Such an in-depth engagement with such a specific portion of the text ensured that I became much more aware of important details like word choice and frequency, as well as overarching thematic points and their relevance to the rest of the play. It was a highly challenging but rewarding exercise to extract my ideas about the meaning of the English and use the details in the Greek to support these ideas. I also experienced the difficulties of achieving things like successful time management and facilitating group discussion. While at least for me, it can sometimes be scary or uncomfortable to present original ideas to peers, I found that I really enjoyed sharing my findings and ideas about these lines with my classmates and hearing their thoughts about them in response. Their comments were productive, and they observed things about these lines that I myself missed, even though I read them at least 10 times beforehand. I think that I will remember this point the most about the experience, namely that no matter how many times I read something and think that I know about it, someone else always has a different perspective to provide or point worth listening to. This concludes episode 12 of Sophocles Antigone in 2019. Tune into the next episode for a continued analysis of Creon and Haemon's dialogue from my classmate Nikhil. Once again, my name is Lexi, and if you enjoyed what you heard, please feel free to leave us a comment and let us know your thoughts. Thank you for listening.